Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor is an author, scholar, columnist, essayist, and political and cultural critic, and our favorite unwitting provocateur of the left because of his sober, judicious, and dispassionate analysis. And I know we discussed that in our last episode, but I think it's still an apt description of Victor. He is the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. This episode, we're going to get into the origins of woke and then some of the careers that have been affected by woke. We'll be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back. And I would like also to remind Victor's listeners that he can be found on Facebook at Hanson's Morning Cup and on Twitter at VD Hanson. And we're also on Getter and MeWe. So you're all welcome to join through a multitude of social media platforms. Victor, I hope you're doing well today. And if there's anything on your mind before we get into the origins of woke, please let us know.
Well, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm almost strangled, as I said, long COVID, 7 months, and I'm getting better. I think I'll be completely over with it on January 1 is my goal. I know I fudged a goal, but that's the way that is. I've said November 1st, December 1st. But for all those out there, I would reassure you that it's a limiting, self-limiting autoimmune reaction, it seems to me. I'm looking out at a rainstorm in the San Joaquin Valley and Central Valley of California. We really need it. This is not going to solve the drought, but it's step one. And if we can get, my goal is always, if we, our goal is, should be 5 or 6 feet of snow in the Sierra. Let's say 6 to 7,000 feet by January 1. And we did that last year, and then it didn't, you know, it didn't rain, and we had a drought, but it's a good start, and let's hope it continues. Yes. Other than that, I'm working on this book, The End of Everything, about how certain wars end in the complete destruction of a civilization and why that is. So I've been pretty busy lately, but life is getting better.
All right. Well, let's dive right in then to the issue of woke. And you know, you spoke about that you were hoping to talk about this, and so I did a little research on it, and it seems to go way back. But I think first, maybe if we could define what is woke, and then go into its origins, that would be nice.
Well, thank you. Well, what is woke? Ostensibly, woke. The doctrine, not what woke say it is, but empirically and from an outsider's point of view, it's an ancient doctrine, and that is that if there's not general equality, what woke calls equity, then there has to be culpability. And equity is defined as everybody should be pretty much equal, not equality of opportunity, but state mandated equality of result. So woke is this. This person over there has less than that person. And that is because this person is a woman or a transgendered person or a gay person or a black person or a Latino person. That's the primary reason why there's inequality. And therefore, it can be addressed because human nature is malleable. So we can go in and say, this person is a victim and you are part of a collective victimizer group. You are part of an oppressor. So you can, through reparatory action, you can help the oppressed. What is reparatory action in terms of woke? Most radically can be reparations, as California has just announced in a committee that they're suggesting that each person of African American descent, not defined very accurately, one quarter, one eighth from Nigeria 20 years ago without ancestors who were slaves with them, Oprah, LeBron, who knows, but you know, a quarter of $1 million each. Or it can be radical affirmative action, not to the point of proportional representation, that is 13% of African Americans or 10% of Latinos, but repertory admissions, which I think all of the major universities are now engaging in, but they won't disclose it. Suddenly, their admissions policies have gone from semi-transparent to zero transparency. But they are letting people in for repertory reasons. Things like that can happen. So that is what the woke is. But how is it enforced? What are the means necessary to achieve radical equality of result? Cancel culture, ostracism, attack on the past, statue toppling, name changing, Trotskyization, erasures of your name, who you are, preemptive deterrence. So if you dare say a word, or if you don't sign a diversity, equity, inclusion oath, or your syllabus, if you're a professor or a teacher, is not approved by the particular czar, then you're in trouble. That type of climate of fear. Sort of what we see going, what trying to make an example of Elon Musk so no one else would dare follow that trajectory. That's what woke is. Mm-hmm. And you ask, well, what were the origins of it? Well,
yeah.
You know, we know what it is. It's basically, it goes an immediate history. It came out of the 1980s Cultural Revolution, the Jesse Jackson, you know, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization has to go. The culture wars in which the left, remember, went after Saul Bellow. And I guess they called him the three Bs, Bellow, William Bennett, who was the humanities director, National Humanities Director under Ronald Reagan, I guess, and George H.W. Bush and Alan Bloom. But that goes back to the 60s revolution that it was kind of a Marxist radical egalitarian, goes back to the Frankfurt School. But ultimately, it goes back to Marxism and Jacobinism in the French Revolution. And that is, remember, fraternity, egalitarianism, not liberty or give me death, as in our revolution. So the idea is an ancient one, that all people should be equal. And because you and I are not equal, maybe you have more money, less money, better inheritance, worse inheritance, better health, less ability, more ability, doesn't matter. It's on the outside. the outcome, the backside, the result. And then we're going to get some platonic guardians, czars in the university, maybe John Kerry in his private jet on climate change. Who knows? Maybe Al Sharpton, Ta-Nehisi Coates, all these people, these self-appointed Hannah Nicole Jones, I think her name is, or Nicole Hannah Jones, excuse me. She's, all of these people are going to adjudicate who is responsible for inequality, and we're going to turn over power to them. And that's what we're doing. And that's what it is. And it has a long genesis, and we know the means of it, how it operates from history. And that is, it creates a climate of fear, and it creates deterrence, so that anybody who questions it is immediately suspect. And the projectionists will say, even though we practice racism, i.e. we call it, you know, others call it reverse discrimination, we accuse you of racism. That's how it works. That's how it works through the centuries.
I was just, as you were talking, thinking the way you're describing it, it sounds like the early 19th century social utopians who all tried to create these perfect societies where everybody was, you know, pretty much egalitarian principles on it. But they did have this idea that competition is what led to inequality. And every one of those ideas were just either castles in the sky ideas, or when they tried to implement them, they just round failures. And I guess Robert Owens,
New Harmony,
yeah, New Harmony, Indiana. And it's so, I would project based on that woke and wokeism should roundly turn into a terrible failure because it mistakes human nature. Is that what?
Yeah, I mean, look at. It's modern progressivism. Woodrow Wilson, it ultimately has to attack the Constitution. It really does, because the Constitution is based on individual freedom and freedom of choice and expression. And so it always goes after the Constitution. That's why the wokers, they want to get rid of the Electoral College. They don't like the Senate. They don't think it's representative enough. Two senators in Wyoming versus two in California, not fair. They want to go after the idea that the states have primary responsibility for balloting. They hate these ancient institutions like the filibuster or the nine-person Supreme Court. So the wokers think that because they're morally superior, it's really got that, you know, I just want to pause. It's that pilgrim Puritan founding in America that was, initially it was zealous, but it was good. All those beautiful campuses and universities that they founded from Maine all the way through the Carolinas that were religious in nature, Andover, Brown, Harvard, yeah, all of those. But it was this idea that we're going to be morally superior in our lives, and therefore we're going to create institutions, city on the hill, and that zealotry. It was good in some ways. I mean, it provided the moral foundations against slavery, the abolitionists. And it really, and then it started to become more and more zealous with Reconstruction. And that might have been good too, Reconstruction, even in its intense forms, given the pathologies of slavery in the aftermath. But when you lose your God and you still have those cultural traditions of intolerance and certainty, and it's not certainty about God and God's way, but man's way, radical humanitarianism, and you believe you can improve human nature and make a new man, well, then you're getting very close to Soviet and Maoist territory. And that's what these woke people do. They say, give us your children and give us the power in our schools, and we can eliminate prejudice against transgenderism. We can say that we can dethrone the toxic male-dominated nuclear family. We can get rid of the idea that two or three or four children are good. We can get rid of patriarchy. We can get rid of white male, Christian, heterosexual dominance. And that's what they want. You have to give them the power. And the subtext is they never have 51%. never of popular support. So they have to go to the institutions. And the institutions, we know what they are, K through 12, corporate boardroom, professional sports, entertainment, media, Silicon Valley, corporate boardroom, etc. And they saturate those institutions with wokeism, and then they affect public opinion. And so, you know, Barack Obama in 2008 runs on the premise that he can't get elected if he's for gay marriage. So he says he thinks marriage should be between a man and a woman. You say that today, you're a candidate, and you're done. And why? Because the institutions have demanded that, and they have molded and changed public opinion in just a decade and a half.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yes, that's so.
And anybody who stands up against it is public enemy number one. And we know if you stood up and said something about the Salem witch trials or the excesses of Joe McCarthy, or if you were, you know, you said something about the Bolsheviks, or you were Hollywood. You know, the thing about the blacklisting in Hollywood is if you were in the 1930s and you were really conservative, then you were blacklisted de facto. Whereas in the 1950s, if you were a commie or hard leftist, you were blacklisted. And the same thing in present day, if you're conservative, look what's going on with James Woods. And so that's how it operates, with through intimidation. And it's alienating people right now. So I think that that's the origins of it. That's what it is. And we know how it's applied in the real world. It goes after people. And I've encountered it for 30 years. And so I can go into a book on the ancient world and see a footnote that was written before it was an outspoken critic or columnist. And the footnotes are very favorable. And then after, say, 2003 or four, when I started to express conservative ideas in the public domain, I can see the same type of footnotes, but they refer to the same books, but in a negative fashion. I can go into my Wikipedia and they'll say that I'm a QAnon or whatever that is. I don't even know what it is, supporter. And that will be constantly updated by hard left people to send a message to a person. And so what it does is, I have so many people, and I know everybody that's listening has had this experience. They'll say to you, "Hey, I'm glad you did that. Hey, thank you. Hey, you're right, but you know, I couldn't do that. I don't want to do that. I got a family. I got to." So there's always reasons why you can't do it. And that's what woke assumes, that they can create a climate of fear and deterrence. And they're bullies. And I think, to be candid to the audience, I think it's based a lot of it on racism, because they feel that your superficial appearance is how you are self-defined. It's essential. It's not incidental to who you are. And when we say woke, it's becoming more and more synonymous with race. And it has nothing to do with class. And that's its Achilles heel. Because believe me, the Latino population, the white population, the black population, everybody is not going to want to give $255,000 a year to Oprah or LeBron James. They're just not going to do it. They don't think there's any need to do that. And they don't think that somebody who came from Nigeria 10 years ago needs the public purse. And they don't believe that somebody who's 1/8 or 1/15, they don't believe we want to go back to the one drop rule of the old South, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought maybe we could go through some of the manifestations of woke in our culture, and I'll name them, and maybe you can tell us what exactly the wokesters are trying to suggest. They reject American and even Western exceptionalism.
Okay, you want to just do a minute? You just name them off. We'll do a lightning round.
Yeah.
Okay. So they believe, remember, the idea of radical equality of result applies not just to individuals, but to nations in the global Marxist sense. So who are you to say that the West is exceptional? If it is exceptional by disinterested data, whether it's GDP, scientific research, standard of living, you name it, material acquisitions, Bill of Rights, then it's because it was privileged it privileged white male people was based on inequality and stealing the wealth of indigenous people or the wealth of African Americans as slaves. It's nothing to do to their intrinsic ability or singularity or the ideas, because you can't have anything better than anything else. It was built on oppression. So when we look at Western exceptionalism through woke-Marxist lenses, you have to say there is oppression somewhere. So we have to spot it and to explain it and to end it. And the oppression is that a white male European landowning oppressor class came to this country and then started killing off everybody that wasn't like themselves, took power, and greedily created a capitalist system for themselves. That's what they would say.
Yeah.
And then everybody, and they can't say this. Okay, if it's so toxic, why are 3 million people coming from central and southern Mexico whose premises are absolutely antithetical? Why are they leaving a socialist paradise in Mexico with fellow people who look like themselves to come up to this white dominated, racist, exploitative capitalist system? And that's what the wokes, and I guess they would call that their suffering narcotics of the masses, like, or maybe their religion has befuddled them, as Marx would say. Who knows? They have certain opiates that don't let them see the truth. And they, you know, they need a Stanford professor who's tenured, who lives in Woodside, who drives an Audi to campus to explain how exploitive this. Maybe they can enlist the Bankman-Fried couple, the two law professors who he, Mr. Bankman-Fried, remember, wrote treatises to help Elizabeth Warren to have a more equitable tax system. And she, Miss Friedman, Bankman-Fried, she had her own, I think it was Close the Gap. It was the idea that I'm going to channel dark Silicon money to hard left candidates through my PAC. And guess what, Sammy? They owned millions of dollars of Bahamas real estate. I didn't know law professors made that much money. And if I was a tax expert, I would say, if I bought $1 million condo for myself, and if I have $16 million in property in my name, the money must have come from the cryptocurrency empire transferred through maybe Alameda, illegally probably. But the point is, did they pay gift tax on it? This is just, I'm just doing this as an extraneous exercise in the contradictions of wokeism and exceptionalism.
Yeah.
So excuse me, go to your next. Yeah, it's not becoming a lightning round, it's becoming a slug round. I'll be briefer.
Yeah, I think these will be briefer because you've sort of said stuff about these in what you've just said. So number two is the U.S. is not a true democracy.
It isn't. It is a constitutional republic. They mean it's not a true democracy and that it's not a socialist equality of result Athenian democracy. It's not, but it was never intended to be because the founders were not crazy. They read classical literature on Rome. There was a tripartite balance of power, judiciary, executive, legislative. And in Athens, it was twice a month, whatever 51% of the demos thought was law, instantaneously, without constitutional protections very much at all. So they said, we don't want that. They killed Socrates. They killed everybody on Milos. They executed the Mytileneans. We read about it. Jefferson claimed he read Thucydides 20 lines in Greek each morning. So they didn't want that. They didn't want that. They want a constitutional republic. That's what we are.
Yeah, but I think what the wokesters mean is that there are marginalized people that don't get to participate in this democracy because it was created by white men.
Yes. So what they want, and the wokesters, I mean, Plato knew wokesters. So when he wrote, I think it was in the Gorgias, when he said there won't be happy until the dogs and the donkeys vote, what he meant is that the theory of radical inclusion without criteria is endless, and there's always going to be some objection of exclusion. Yeah. And so when you look at Georgia, they have record turnout in a state that they have sworn to us is pathologically addicted to voter suppression. So They don't have it's everything is fluid and negotiable. They don't have any absolutes, no canons, no principles, no code. It's just all malleable. So when you say people don't participate, they participate in a fashion that they never have. But the woke borrowing from Marxism is it doesn't matter. You just keep that's like a battering ram. You say voter suppression, voter suppression, voter suppression, racism, racism, racism. And then the body politic says, okay, we'll have mail-in ballots. Racist, racist, racist. You say, okay, the name doesn't have to be complete. Racist, racist, racist. Okay, your name doesn't have to match the registrar's list. Racist, racist, racist. Okay, you don't have to have an accurate address. Racist, racist, racist. Okay, if it's examined, you can cure it. You can ask the person to come back. Racist, racist, racist. That's what they do. And it's always preemptive. And so the poor traditionalist gets like the battering ram bruises him. He says, okay, just let me go. You can have third party harvesting. You can see it on the border with the, you know, Bush Republicanism says, just make it all go away. I'll get in a fetal position. I can't take it anymore. Wasn't that in True Romance, that last scene?
The elevator where the guy crashes down.
Yeah, where he puts a gun to make it all go away. Why is this happening to me? Well, that's sort of the Republican Party on all these issues. When they say, you're racist, and you say, okay, we'll have more people come in through a guest worker. No, that's racist. Okay, we'll have some illegally. Okay, we'll give amnesty. No, okay, we'll give citizens. That's how they work. It's never, and it's endless, and it's designed to be endless. And the only irony, the only thing that stops it is when they get their way, whether it's Mao's China, that's the ultimate end of the line that this train is going to, or the Soviet Union or European socialism, then it doesn't work. You end up in San Francisco. And then they say, we voted Chesi Boudin in, and he let all the criminals out, and they're attacking my house. Or we gave Gavin Newsom all these billions of dollars to stop homeless, and they're defecating on my market street. Or I can't park my car. I have to roll down the windows and put a sign, nothing in here, not car, not locked. Well, chaos, or what we see in Chicago with Lori Lightfoot. That's where it ends up. And then it implodes. And then people get together in the ashes and the rubble, and they say, wow, let's create a new system. Maybe it should be something like the founders thought. And there we go again. But, it's a very painful, sad process. Pathemathos, as Aeschylus said, learning through pain.
Yeah. Victor, let's take a moment for a break and come right back and finish up some more of these. I think I'm not going to go through all of them because we might be too long, but we'll look at a few more of those manifestations of wokeism after these messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. And Victor, the one thing I want to add to it is that what you've been saying is that it's not logical there where they go from, some sort of statement or maybe omission of a statement to you're a racist. That it has no logic behind it. And that's what's, I think, frightening. So number three is...
You mean like Larry Elder is a white supremacist and a racist? Remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's just no logic behind it. Who could even listen to him after that? Right? But anyways, they also claim systemic and institutional racism.
That's important, what you just said. Anytime you see racism with that adjective, that preface adjective, systemic, institutional, then you know that there's not racism, or you wouldn't need that adjective. So when they say systemic racism, that means it's systemic error. You can't see it. You don't notice it because it's everywhere. And it takes certain diversity, equity, inclusion czars at $300,000 a shot to tell you where it is. And so we have certain tools of spotting it, microaggressions, safe spaces. They dream up trigger warnings, all of these weird things to justify their existences, which is to find racism. And I'll be very brief. And the other reason, of course, we know that there's not racism is not just the adjectives that are used to enhance something that doesn't really exist as it used to, but more importantly, we have these psychodramas that are complete fabrications. The Duke lacrosse story. Remember the stripper who was supposedly raped and battered by the white male Duke? Complete hoax. The Tawana Brawley, 1989, that prompted Al Sharpton, smeared and Steve Pagones, that guy, Jack and I talked about that. Then we had the two Duke cases. We had the volleyball team where the person in the stand supposedly said the N-word. Nobody, no tape of it. They recorded all this sounds, no evidence of it. We had the Juicy Smollett. Remember Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi? This is shocking. Juicy was attacked by two people with MAGA hats, white, and they were carrying a lynch rope. And they had bleach to bleach him white. And they did this at 2 a.m. in subarctic temperatures. And we had to believe that. Yeah, that shows you there's too many victims and there's not enough victimizers. So you have to start. I don't know how many campuses I've been on in my life, either as a visitor or as a faculty member or as a visiting faculty, but it's quite a lot. And I can tell you in my lifetime, I have noticed 7 to 10 what I would call rope incidents or inward incidents. And that is in the daily paper or somewhere, someone found a rope hanging from a tree or somebody saw an N-word written on a dorm room. And 99% either that didn't happen or they mistook maybe a volleyball piece of rope or something, or it was planted to create that psychodrama. But in every single case, that was not a legitimate and dangerous sign of pernicious racism. And there was never an apology. And there was never punishment if a perpetrator was found who created that hoax. Yeah. And that's, again, that's just empirical. And that is a barometer or a symptom of there's too many victims and there's not enough victimizers to satisfy that growing demand.
Yeah. And they also say, and this is number four, that you have white privilege and get this, you don't know about it. So
again, that's the same principle. You need an expert at a very high salary in your corporate boardroom. You need one in your university. You need one in your K-12 school. You need one in your institution, your foundation, and they have specialized skills. They're like a wolf that can smell things that you can't smell. So they come in and they say, you know, it's systemic or it's implicit or it's insidious, but you don't even know that you're racist. So you've got to buy, this is Mark Milley, right? You've got to, I read Professor Kendi's book. I didn't know I was a racist. We're going to find it out in the military. I'm going to go find out who all those white supremacists are. And I guarantee you, we're going to root them out. And Lloyd Austin's going to do the same thing. And bingo, the U.S. Army can't meet its recruitment targets. Because guess what? Your white male suspect who is not racist and has no record in the military of systemic racism, but does have a record of dying at twice his numbers in the general population in hellholes like Afghanistan, Iraq, and has been doing that generation, ain't going to do it anymore when you call him a racist without any evidence. So his mom and his dad are saying, you know, I served in the Gulf War, first Gulf War, and Gramps fought in Vietnam, and your great-grandfather fought in World War II in Korea, but you're not going to go in that military because they're going to call you a racist every day of your life, and you're going to have to be brainwashed, and we're not going to let you do it. I've had that conversation with talks or emails or giving lectures in the Q&A at least 50 times, and it's usually the mom. The mother says, dear Professor Hansen, my son that wants to join the Marine Corps and be the fifth in my family, fifth generation or the Army or the Rangers or the 101st or whatever, but I don't want him to join because I'm worried about him. And that's what it is. That's the fallout from trying to suggest that you don't even know you're a racist.
And, exactly.
And remember the principle of all this. When you say racist, it only can be the white majority. And when we say white majority, there's no qualifications. So I know your family, Sammy, is multiracial, and mine is too, in the sense that I have one brother who married a Mexican-American woman. I have another brother who has two Mexican-American children, and that's just the way it is. It's in every family. And nobody makes any distinction. It doesn't matter. Once you're called white, there's no exceptions. You're just monolithically racist. And people who are not white cannot be racist. So you can have a tape at the LA City Council meeting, and you can have three of the future leaders or the present leaders of the Chicano community, political community, and they can say on there that they can refer to an African-American as a little monkey, or they can refer to a homosexual man as a bitch, or they can make fun of white people, or they can make fun of Oaxacans as ugly little people, fejos, and they're not racist. They don't have to resign, but the other two don't. Why resign? We're not racist. We can't be. We're oppressed. And the same thing with Al Sharpton. We're talking about anti-Semitism now. And I deplore Mr. Fuentes, and I think Donald Trump, I don't know whether it's just an excursus, but I don't know what his mentality is right now, because in the polls, he's even with Biden and he's ahead of DeSantis for the primary vote. And yet, whether it's calling Glenn Youngkin's name Chinese or sanctimonious or making fun of the race of Mitch McConnell's wife or having dinner with Kanye West, who's completely lost it, if he ever had it, and Nick Fuentes, he's almost like he's self-imploding. But what he did was he gave this tool to the left who says, we can't be anti-Semitic. We're people of color. And then there's the, you know, if we, you and I were talking in 2013, we would be talking about hit the Jew game in the black community of New York. Hit the Jew with a knockout game. But they said, hit the Jew. And we were talking about Jesse Jackson, Hymietown. And we'd be talking about Al Sharpton, we would say Al Sharpton and the Jews, come over to my place. Come over here with your yarmulke on, I'll hit you. Or the Reverend Wright, the personal pastor of Barack Obama. I can't talk to him because them Jews have him. So that was on the left. And we can get into Ilhan Omar and the whole campus. I was at Stanford. Ben Shapiro was scheduled to speak. I've mentioned that before. There was the bug spray, nice little Holocaust image of using a kind of chemical agent to kill people. So, and that was endemic, and no one said a word. So anti-Semitism is a left, but they can't be anti-Semitic. It only can be conservative, white, male, heterosexual, Christian.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like they call everybody racist and it's illogical. They don't even have an argument. And yet
they'll keep doing it. They'll keep doing it until two things happen.
That's why.
Yes, it's successful. And that you hit the nail on the head until it's not successful. And how would it not be successful? Until people say one of two things. You're the racist. You're the one that's obsessed with race. And look at your class. You're privileged. You have lifetime employment at university. Your income is above the average per capita income. You are the racist. Or somebody's just indifferent. I'm racist. Why not call me a Martian? I could care less. Call me a child molester. Call me a I don't care what you call me. It has zero effect, nothing. And when that happens, either you say the person's calling you, you're the racist, or I don't care what you. And when that magic moment appears, then this lie will dissipate and people will suddenly say, well, wake up, and they'll say, wow, what was woke? God, did we go through a Salem witch trial? Or there's a third alternative, Sammy, that a very prominent leftist will be called a racist. And I know that Joe Biden, I think he has some racialist tendencies when he says, hey, junkie, or you ain't black, or put you all in chains, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Or Barack Obama is the first guy who's an articulate black man, or the donut shop. You can't go to a donut shop with all these Indians, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But when they go after an icon, then you know what happens. The movement, where's the Me Too movement right now? It dissipated. What killed the Me Too? Yeah. It was Joe Biden and Tara Reid. Here came a woman out of the shadows and said, you know what? This man who is running for president of the United States put me up against the wall, forced himself on me, and put his hand in my private parts and sexually assaulted me. And I told people at the time that he did it, I was afraid. And these people are still around and they can identify. In fact, my mother, I told, and she called up a talk show and mentioned it on the air, not by name, but said a prominent senator assaulted my daughter. So there was a lot more evidence than anything that Susan Blasey Ford said about an 18-year-old Brett Kavanaugh. This wasn't an 18-year-old Joe Biden. This was a U.S. Senator Joe Biden. And remember that senator, what was her name? Hirano or whatever her name was.
Yeah, Hawaii. Yeah.
Women must be believed. And all of a sudden, is women must not be believed. You can't believe women. Tara Reid's, and they just took after her. They destroyed her. And at that moment, people said, okay, Me Too is over. We looked at who we went after, and gosh, we got good Harvey Weinstein. He was a big guy on our side. And then we destroyed Al Franken. We got rid of good old Charlie Rose. We even went out and destroyed Kevin. We're killing all the people on the left, the Hollywood gay actors, the Hollywood left-wing actors, the left-wing politicians, the people in the media. We're getting Matt Lauer. We destroyed him. We even destroyed Garrison Keillor. This has got to stop. This is Salem witch trial stuff, and it stopped. But, you know, it didn't stop really until the breaking point was Joe Biden and Tara Reid.
Yeah, I don't know, though, that they won't bring it back at a convenient moment for them.
Yes, if they're in the little woke workshop somewhere, the little elves are building a new machine, and it's sort of like, let's bring back the Me Too accuse machine, but can we program it in to it only goes after right-wing conservatives? Because last time, the damn Frankensteinian machine went after our own and cannibalized our movement. It's too dangerous. So next time we create this monster, make sure it's selective. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. So I'm going to just state the last three here, and because I think they kind of fall under some of the stuff we've talked about, that law enforcement is racist and should be defunded. It's number four. Number six is gender identity is fluid, and if you say otherwise, you're wrong. And number seven is just the usual, like racism, sexism is endemic in the system.
Okay, so very quickly.
Go ahead.
Police, 11 million people arrested per year. And we found out right after the George Floyd, thanks to the Washington Post, who did some analyses, that the number of African-American men who were shot unarmed and killed by policemen nationwide, while it was more than 13% of their demographics in the general population, it was not more when you factor in the 11 million people a year who come into contact with the police and are arrested. So there was not a systemic, as to use their term, racist pattern that they could detect. And we had Roland Fryer at Harvard, the economist, who basically, they tried to destroy his career when he published data on other tangential matters that confirmed that. It doesn't matter. And so, and then they did defund the police. They didn't, you know, the left is so weird, so predictably weird. It says, defund the police, defund the police, defund the police. So then they start massive layoffs and radical cutbacks in the budget in Minneapolis and Seattle and Oregon. And then the crime spikes, right? And then they say, we didn't defund the police. Look, they still have a budget. So they use that word. I mean, it's either all or nothing. No, you cut back on the budget. You cut back on the officers on the street. You let these George Soros-funded attorneys, public prosecutors go crazy. You did it. You told the, as I said, I have that little formula. I've said it before in this. The criminal says, if I hit that guy in the head, I smash and grab, I carjack, I won't be arrested. If I'm arrested, I won't be indicted. If indicted, I won't be convicted. If convicted, I won't be jailed. If jailed, I will not be there for long. That's how they look at it.
Of course.
And yeah, we have this 40-year high in criminal assaults. I really like the idea that the mayor of New York is, you know, once in a while says that the subway's not safe after all these left-wing people say, I take the subway all the time. It's very safe. Now he's a rat czar. He wants people to, he's got an ad out to get a rat killer. Wonder why that is. That they, there's rats in New York again on the street.
Apparently. So we're,
it's it, the whole leftist Rousseauian movement is pre-civilizational. Remember that, that it's destroying all of the carefully constructed, you know, rules and protocols that separate us from savages. And they just like to dismantle them in the name of equity. And the result is pre-civilizational chaos.
Yeah, which is why the last thing on it, and I know this is a rabbit hole we probably don't want to go down, but environmentalism and that environmentalism is part
it's
of
all or nothing.
Well. Yeah.
The polar bear, I saw Al Gore's, I watched a little bit, it was on Earth in the Balance. There's no polar bears today. Today, the polar bear populations in the areas that he said would be extinct are, you know, they're either normal or they're excessive. Yeah. And so all of these things didn't come true. I think AOC said 10 years we had, right? She's already had three of them. 7 years, everything's going to... I get attacked all the time and say, you're in California and there's not going to be any rain. And 3 years ago, we had one of the wettest, most catastrophic storm years in history when Orville Dam almost collapsed. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's not empirical. You just, it's intolerant. You either, you know, you either say that the world's going to be destroyed by people like you. And then if you object, you're a climate denialist. They love that term denialist because it has associations with some of the right-wing people who deny the Holocaust. Not they don't mention the Arab world, but completely its leadership, many of them deny the Holocaust, but they're talking about a right-winger or two that's nuts that says that. So they use the word denialist for climate and all these other things.
Yeah, so let's turn to the people that are our leadership of woke and what's happened with them or perhaps their hypocrisies. I'm talking about our tech oligarchs and or entertainment. So I have a list of people and maybe we can look at and you can talk about their various things. I think the most interesting one is Jack Dorsey.
Yeah, I haven't seen this list, so I'm going to just be spontaneous.
He's disappeared from the whole scene. But what are your thoughts? He was the leading wokester, owned Twitter before Elon Musk did.
Yeah, I think he was a kind of a tech nerd. And he went out to Silicon Valley and he realized what the rules were. I don't think he was innately a radical at all. He was a tech nerd that got this little social media idea bug in his head, and he was lucky and he was talented. So he creates Twitter. And the idea, you have a certain number of characters. I've never done it myself, so I shouldn't really talk about the mechanics of it. Other people involved in VictorHanson.com do it. But he understood the protocols of Silicon Valley. By that, I mean, he looked at the Apple founder, Steve Jobs. He said, that's the black getup, but I can't really do it. Elizabeth Holmes is doing that. And he looked at the Mark Zuckerberg, you know, tie-dye and jeans getup. That's taken. So he did the kind of Charles Manson nutty look. So he did the beard and the nose ring, I think he has.
Yeah.
And kind of 1,000-yard stare. And then he decided, then he just did what they were supposed to. You've got to get all these techies and left-wing people to flood from the all over the country to San Francisco. And he was going to be a little cuter by making the... you know, the headquarters in San Francisco and not in Silicon Valley. So he was really woke. And then these people, the lunatics, took over the asylum. And he just thought, oh, my God, I created Frankenstein and I'm not going to challenge that monster. So he just sort of filtered out and counted his money. Basically, he said, wow, this is weird. Twitter doesn't make a profit. And the more money it loses, the more valuable it is. It's worth billions. I'm a billionaire. And so every time, once in a while, they'd call him into Congress and they say, you know, you're censoring things and you're suppressing news and you're not just a media organization like you claim to be, because you're kind of a public utility. You use the airwaves and people communicate with each other like they do with the phone, or they need to do that like they do with the PG&E here in California. And so we want a little bit of regulation. And he played that. Oh, wow, I agree with you. Yeah. Did you know that Twitter did that? Yeah, that's wrong. That was really good. Yeah, that's wrong. And then it's kind of like, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya. I got to go back to the Bay Area and space out.
Yeah.
And then when Elon Musk came along and he offered all this money, and it was like, wow, I got a money losing deal, and he's offered me $40-something billion, the stock. Yeah, I can just get this pile and turn over these lunatics that took over to him. So that's what he was.
He agreed with them into inaction. It's really
strange. He did. I mean, he wasn't a bad person. He just created it. He was Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And Dr. Frankenstein was kind of a good guy. He thought he was making the, you know, a perfect being. And so he thought that this thing would help people and communicate. And then he just saw it. What it got this way. It was kind of cute in the beginning. He was going to look kind of weird and act kind of weird. Everybody was going to be politely weird. And then it was sort of like Kerensky had some good points about the czars, and then the Bolsheviks came.
Yeah. Another Dr. Frankenstein, of course, is Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg. Now, that guy is a little different. That guy, he has the same getup. Remember, he does, was it 4th of July? He gets on his motorized surfboard and he wears the American flag with his T-shirt and he zooms across the lake or something. So he Mr. Flip-Flop or whatever he is, he's the guy that has, they all end up in Hawaii. They all have the big, you know what I mean? They have the big estate. And then whether it's Barack Obama, who tries to attack the environmentalists, don't want him to, you know, create a drainage, a block to a natural drainage near his property. Or it's Mark Zuckerberg. It's got, I don't know how many thousands of acres, and he wants to build a wall that denies denies Hoi Polloi access to the coast, or he puts a big wall around his against city ordinances, perhaps in Palo Alto. Whatever it is, they are never subject to the consequences of their ideology. They all have to have certain set asides for themselves. In his case, he's a very funny guy. It's like, hey, Joe Rogan, hey, the FBI came. That's kind of weird. I had mixed emotions about it. No, you didn't. You had put $419 million into the 2020 election with the express purpose of usurping the registrar's responsibilities in key precincts of key states to warp the vote with your dark money that was channeled into quote-unquote nonprofits. That's what you did. And you knew exactly that like Twitter mob that you were going to suppress knowledge or communication about or postings concerning Hunter's laptop, but deep down in your dark soul, you knew that that was accurate because there was zero information to support the 50 quote unquote intelligence experts who said it was Russian disinformation. So he's the same thing. He has this little physical get up, the clothes get up. He's just one of the people. He's just an aw shucks young guy. And he's on the left, but he's the reasonable left. He's created something that is used to suppress free expression and to warp things. And I think he's a lot more culpable than Jack Dorsey, to tell you the truth. He's a lot richer and he's got a lot more power than Jack Dorsey. But remember, there is this Greek concept of nemesis, and it's based on hubris, and it leads to ate or destruction. And once you have that much money and people call you up and say you're, you know, Socrates, and once you think you believe your own hype and you can get as many houses, as much, many things you want, then you start doing things like Meta. And the idea that the whole country is going to put on a bunch of headphones, and then, I mean, most people go to sleep and they're terrified of alternate reality, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is such a thing as I don't take this medication because it gives me creepy dreams. Or, you know what I mean? I turn off that TV set because that particular, you know, Natural Born Killers movie gives me the creeps, or Blue Velvet. I don't want to watch that. Yeah. But Mark Zuckerberg is going to give you, you know, visor and all this get up that you have to put on so that you can enter this. I don't know what it is. It's sort of an alternate reality that's not as nice as this reality, but that's what, and he's bet his whole company on it. So he's crashed the stock price. He's lost billions of dollars in wealth, and he's going to keep doing it.
Yep.
And that's divine retribution that makes people mad. I think it was a fragment of Euripides said, or it may be Menander. I know I got like a lot of classical scholars. I got to be careful. Said, whom the gods destroy, they first make mad. And they're making him crazy. I think there's people at Facebook that say, how can we put a straitjacket on him and put him in a room so he stops this Meta thing before he destroys us?
Well, let's take a few minutes for a break and come back and talk about Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates. I'm not sure which one of these is the more evil of the two, but let's listen to these messages first.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back at the Victor Davis Hanson Show. And so now these two, Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, I mean, Bill Gates and his China relations is really suspect, but Jeff Bezos is no better with labor relations and even getting Seattle recently to repeal a law that was going to raise more taxes on corporations, and it was aimed at the homeless, and he got him to repeal it. And so all his wokeness seems to have gone away.
They're very different.
Pocketbook. Yeah.
They're very different, but they're very astute in the same way. And what that means is that they start with the premise that I had an idea, and I'm very bright, and they were, and I'm very hardworking, and they were, and I captured market share, and I got wealthy. But the way to get really wealthy and really powerful that reflects my own singular genius and my own prerogatives and my own natural right is to create a monopoly and to make a high profit product beyond what I need, beyond the world's imagination. So I just don't want to sell Amazon books. I'm going to sell everything, and I'm going to change the way that people buy, and I'm going to offer them a product. And they wouldn't buy the product if, you know, I'm out here in a farm in the middle of nowhere. And if I want to buy wool socks, I'd have to drive into a little town and go all over and find them, or I can get it as an Amazon Prime member and have it delivered in 24 hours. So that's the product. It's a good product. But his idea was, you know, he got obsessed with it. So I'm not going to have union labor because that's costly. Okay, that's fine. So you're a right-wing capitalist. That's fine too. But he's not a right-wing capitalist, he says. And I'm going to buy out all the competitors. Okay. And I'm going to be really strict in the workplace. Okay. But he's not. He's not a right-wing person, he says. So how do you square that circle, Sammy? You buy the Washington Post. And you tell the Washington Post, I'm not going to interfere. And you guys can bring as many nutty leftists and really destroy the legacy of the Washington Post and turn it into a activist arm of the Democratic Party, which it is. And he did that. And then every once in a while, I mean, he gets kind of shocked. It's like, wow, I believe in capitalism. You know what I mean? It's he comes out and just leaves these little tidbits, like, you know, a little trail behind him of semi-normal sentiments. And that's supposed to reassure us all that, yeah, I'll keep buying from Amazon. The guy is, you know, he believes in the American free enterprise system. But he's really brilliant how he's insulated himself from the left with all of these left-wing gifts. He gave, what's his name, $100 million, the African-American, you know, climate activist. And he gave him,
wasn't that Van Jones or something?
Van Jones, which is not his name, of course. He created that name. It's a fake name.
It's a nice fake name, though.
It is. It makes him look cool. And you know, he was the one that Valerie Jarrett goes, ooh, Van Jones. Yeah. Remember that they hired him as the environmental labor or work. I don't know what it was. He didn't do anything. And then they had to fire him because he was Van Jones, and Van Jones made his career out of calling people names and racists. And he said something about Republicans, and it was beyond the pale. So they ditched him. And then, of course, he ended up, as they all do, on left-wing cable news. But yeah, he got $100 million. So Jeff Bezos. So what I'm saying is that he's got his little Bezos prizes that he gives this shocking amount of money to left-wing people. He's got the Washington Post, and that kind of gives him an indemnity policy to be a hyper-capitalist and a monopolist. He's a little different. He's always smiling, you know, and all this. He's much richer than anyone gave his wife. I think she's the fifth richest person in the United States now, maybe the 10th richest in the world. She's got half of his fortune that was, you know, frozen 4 years ago, whatever it was worth. She got half. She's giving it to left-wing causes, but good, more power to her. But Bill Gates is very strange. He's got these weird ideas that he is going to not just create Microsoft. And again, I think yesterday I worked all day on a Microsoft Word program, and I ordered two things from Amazon Prime. So I'm not going to trash either one of them as far as their products. They did America a great service. I think Microsoft Word is a very good program, and it's made my life the last 20 years much easier. So is Amazon. But they make that inevitable leap. If I'm so smart in the business world, and I got so much money, and I did so much better than other people, it's because I am bright, I'm morally superior, and I'm anointed. Some power in the universe has picked me. Therefore, I'm going to be able to invest in China, and I, Bill Gates, will be one of the first people to get in on creating a Chinese capitalist system. And then they're going to look like Carmel because they've got so much money. And then maybe I'll make the Gates Foundation. We'll vaccinate everybody, but I won't be content with that because I did the Gates Foundation and it's doing all this good. Then I'll start weighing in on everything from Dr. Fauci to China's wonderful reaction to COVID, to the conspiracy theory that it was at the lab. And then I'll start buying farmland too, because I've got to change the way people eat and the way that they farm. So that's his problem, yeah. That he's this utopian and he feels that his success in a particular sector of business is proof, or rather it's prerequisite to his not just his ability, but his divine mission to get into all aspects of our life and to control them like he controls Microsoft. Again, they're monopolists. Yeah. So remember that if you and I were talking in 1993, he was the Prince of Darkness to Silicon Valley. It was Steve Jobs and the Apple hippies. Remember that?
Yeah.
He went out to, Apple was just in extremis. I remember by 1992, I've never used a computer in my life that wasn't Apple. I started at Cal State Fresno with Apples. I've been ever since. I don't know how to use, to the extent they're even different anymore, a non-Apple computer. I've been the most loyal consumer of Apple products, whether it's pads or phones or computers. But that was the war, and they were mad at Bill Gates because he was trying to create systems on PCs that were incompatible with Apple, and he was trying to create a monopoly that would drive Apple out. They hated him. And then, you know, the systems kind of fused, and they were both on the left, and then Apple got is bigger than Bill Gates with the iPhone and et cetera, et cetera. And then they had the same shared premises. You invest a lot in China, you outsource, you offshore, you get a ton of money, you try to buy the Washington Post like Jeff Bezos, or you buy Atlantic like Steve Jobs, Lisa Jobs, his widow, or you get in heavily invested and indebted to the left-wing political movement. You have your foundation, all that stuff. And then you think that because you created a monopoly on iPhones or on Microsoft or on Amazon, or you're Mark Zuckerberg, you created a monopoly, or you're the Google bunch that has 95% of all the searches, that gives you the right to use that methodology in other spheres that have nothing to do with you, whether it's politics or environmentalism or social relations or race, whatever it is. You still think you have that birthright to the success that you got in business in that particular area will ensure that you will be listened to and successful in every area. And it's kind of it's a megalomania complex. They're very dangerous people. I mean, you can go back in the 19th century and you can really praise Carnegie for what he did. You can praise Rockefeller. You can praise Vanderbilt. You can praise the Guggenheim. You can praise all of those people because they created really important businesses, and they were financial buccaneers, J.P. Morgan. But there were a lot of Jay Goulds with them and Jay Fisk. And a lot of them, you know, at the end of their lives, they became philanthropists because they were pretty ruthless in creating their monopolies and driving out competition, Standard Oil Trust, the Sugar Trust, all that.
Yeah, well, speaking of ruthless and huge companies and Apple, there's been recent shows, news on Tim Cook's Apple being complicit with the Chinese and monitoring its citizens. And I just think, wow, it's evil of all evils, it seems like, with Tim Cook.
Tim Cook, yeah. And so, same pattern, even though he didn't found the company, he's a multi-billionaire. They created a great product with the iPhone. I used to talk a lot to Rush Limbaugh, text him, and he was the greatest emissary of iPhones. If you, anybody who knew him and you visited him in Palm Beach, he had a whole closet. He was the most generous guy in the world with iPhones. He would give them to people and send them out. And politics wasn't an issue with Rush on iPhones. It was just, this was a free market product. It's better than the alternative. It's innovative, and I love it. And I admired him for that. And that's what Tim Cook, you know, Apple became. They took a company that was in shambles And with Steve Jobs and then later him, they rebooted it. And now it's I think it's got the greatest market capitalization of almost any company. I think maybe it's up there with Aramco or, I don't know, Google or more. So all power to them. I'm glad they were successful. But again, they've got that megalomania. And so what did he do when the Chinese said, we haven't been able to eliminate this competitor, and they're billing all of these iPhones in China. We want to renegotiate, and we're going to threaten their offshoring in China. He just simply gave them $270 million worth of technical expertise to the Chinese. And a lot of this Apple cloud device material is being used, as you hinted or said, to survey all the Uyghurs and dissidents and the protest against the COVID lockdowns. He doesn't have any problem with it because it's his company and it's just business. But he has a lot of problem with your problem or your business, or, you know, if you want to own a gun, or you don't really think there should be drag, those types of issues. He can put his nose in all of your business, but you don't dare put your nose in his business because he's anointed. He's Apple. And he's really adept. The Apple brand, even at this mega corporate monopolistic state of affairs and its history, is still the kind of renegade company. The Apple, you know, you get visions of the Beatles Apple, and it's kind of a hippie place, and it's weird. And when you go onto your, you know, you go onto an Apple computer, you see all these kind of little news, Apple News, and all these indications that they're woke and they're neat and they're cool. But no, they're monopolistic and they don't give a damn about human rights, the bottom line, profit. They're in competition worldwide with other makers of these devices, and they're not going to let human rights interfere with their bottom line. They do it on the back end. Remember, all these people do it on the back end. How they make their money in Silicon Valley is Jay Gould, J.P. Morgan to the nth degree. And then after they make it, they think they're Andrew Carnegie, but they're not giving to libraries and building us a plan for a library in every small town. You know, in some ways, Steve Case is doing that. He's the guy who made it in AOL, and now he's going around the Midwest and trying to give money to entrepreneurial groups, not based on their politics, but on their location, i.e. there's talent in between the two codes. And that's very admirable. But these guys don't do that. They use that money for their utopian, you know, agendas. And it's very strange how it works. It's based on the principle of medieval penance or exemption. And by that, I mean, it's either one or two things or both. And one of them is, oh man, I feel so guilty. I'm so wealthy. I've made so much money. I gave stuff to the Chinese that they used against innocent demonstrators, or I'm at Google and I've rigged these searches so much that I didn't give other people a chance to get a true result when they wanted to use my product, or you name it. And therefore, I'm going to give all this money to humanitarian causes, or left wing, mostly left wing cause. And therefore, I can sleep at night and I'll go to, I don't know, atheist or agnostic heaven because of that. I just, like the guy who was an usurer in 1500, he just went into the church and said, here's some money, here's some gold Florentines, buy five blocks on the Dome of St. Peter's, and I can continue to charge 18% interest. That's how it works. That, you know, it's kind of an exemption or an indulgence. And then it also alleviates guilt. Yeah. One or the other, or both.
So, Victor, we're coming to the end of our time. So there's lots of other people we could talk about, but I think we hit the top guys. But one more question is just, Elon Musk is coming into all of this and he's changing things. And I was wondering what your thought, because recently he's been in the news with exposing how censorship works, I think, at Twitter. But what are your thoughts on Elon Musk? Is he a new age for us?
He's different. And I don't just say that because what he's doing with Twitter. He was different because he was an immigrant like Peter Thiel, but they were immigrant from politically incorrect places. You know what I'm saying? He didn't come from India or Mexico or Africa. He came from South Africa. So the left went after him, and they do because of that heritage, just like Peter Thiel came from Germany. Those are the two worst places to come from in the left-wing mind. So they were a little different from the beginning, and then they were empirical, and they were kind of candid. And he was a little different as well, as he made things, and he was concrete. So it wasn't just cyberspace. I mean, the guy has a company, I don't know how successful it is, that drills through rock, the Boring Company. And he created a very successful, the most successful private aerospace company with his rockets. They work. And he outdid GM and Ford and Fiat and these and Nissan and Toyota with batteries. And Tesla is a superior product. And these are real concrete things you can touch. It wasn't just he got into Twitter. So he's different. He's grounded in something. He understands that, you know, that people need oil to move. They need food to live. They need shelter to protect themselves from the elements. It's not all, you know, I'm going to recreate the world according to my Woodside mansion, or I'm going to get a big place in Pacific Heights and pontificate about Hoi Polloi is going to do this and that and outlaw natural gas, that kind of thing. He's really grounded in the physical world. And then his own life is kind of reckless, right? He just says what he wants. He does what he wants. He's been married or had several girlfriends, a lot of kids. He doesn't really care what people say about him. I mean, he's very sensitive, but ultimately he understands that what he's doing is a cardinal sin in the left-wing mind. He not only took over their favorite, Sammy, their favorite mechanism, they love Twitter far more than Facebook or any other communication, that generation of leftists. And he took it from them, and took it from them in the sense that we're not going to use this as a monopolistic aid or arm of the left-wing progressive movement. We're not going to do it. It's going to be free. And then that was embarrassing for him, because he made them, as civil libertarians, become Pravda-like censors, right? And that was hypocritical, and they look stupid. And then when he does these things to, he's got a knack about how to poke the left. So when he wants to release this trove, he did it in a really weird way. He took this Matt Taibbi, who used to be, you know, he was with the guy that was the nerd, ex-nerd or whatever. They were in Russia. They had kind of a sordid, he wrote a memoir, and the left, Me Too, went after him, and kind of, he got fired from Rolling Stone. They kind of destroyed him. And then he resurfaced with Substack, very successfully so. And he became almost an expert on how the left-wing mind, that is his former mind or his present mind, works. And he wrote a lot of incisive essays about the totalitarian instincts of the left and how they're manifested in journalism and politics. He's still a person of the left, but they could not stand that. And so what is it? What happens? Elon Musk deliberately makes him the conduit of all these embarrassing revelations. And it's like a trifecta, right? It's Elon Musk they hate. It's the embarrassing disclosures that they were working to suppress free speech, these so-called liberals. And then he picked a journalist that they despised. And he did it pretty effectively. So he's in a different category. He's the world's richest person. So that also means that when they want to destroy him, like, just, I'll take a little hiatus here and just an excursus. When they wanted to destroy Parler, they went into the Google store, the app, and the Amazon, and they destroyed it. Remember? Yes. They had 20 million people ready after the election in January, ready to go, and you could not buy the app. You couldn't get on if you wanted, and the software was not ready because of limited resources to accommodate that demand anyway. And it's kind of, you know, it still exists. It may come back. But the point is, they de facto in 2000, 21 destroyed it. And so they thought, we can do the same thing with Twitter and Elon Musk. And what happened? He had a little phone call with Tim Cook and Apple, and he's sounding a little bit more like he's conservative than just an old-fashioned classical liberal. And there are people in Congress, and the Republicans took the House, and Tim Cook is getting it on the left from his and the right from his incestuous relationship with the Chinese Communist Party in the sake of profits. That doesn't go down well. And then he's getting it from the conservatives. And you know what? From what we've learned about Twitter and what we've seen with Facebook, and we're going to go after you guys because you're monopolies and you are not private companies entirely. You keep saying you are, but then you control all of the searches, or you control 60% of social media, and you have this, or 70% of the Twitter industry. And you do this on the in the public cyberspace. So they're worried. And then he thought, wow, Elon Musk is nuts. He's capable of anything, anytime, anywhere, to any person. And he's the world's richest man. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to do what I did to Parler, to Elon Musk and Twitter. And so he backed off. And you can, and I don't think they're going to be able to stop you from using Twitter by denying you access or new subscribers through a boycott of their apps. Yeah. He's too big and he's too unpredictable and he's too well connected now with people in the conservative movement and the House. And I think, you know, we've got a divided Senate. And Joe Biden's not a popular president. So they are, you know, these guys are, they're wealthy because they're smart and they understand politics. And so they do gravitate toward reality, and they see Elon Musk as somebody who they cannot stand and is dangerous, but they can't strangle him because to do so would be self-destructive to themselves.
Yeah. So maybe we will have some transference into something
his only
new
problem is not his it's not his enemies and it's not his talent, it's himself. And that is, I don't know how you be simultaneously the world's richest person, the world's most innovative private space company, the world's most successful car maker, and now taking on all of Silicon Valley's social media giants. I don't know how you do that all as one person and then tweet all the time and sound off on every considerable issue, whether you're trapped in a cave in Asia or what, he will sound off on. And so in that sense, you know, as I said earlier, it's kind of like Donald Trump. Donald Trump is in, I'll just finish with this, Sammy. He's very bright. Yeah, I think his 4 years of governance, forget politics, if just look at the border or the economy or energy or foreign policy or upping the defense budget, it was very successful, maybe more successful than any president in the last 50 years, easily. And now he's been given a great gift because the people who said that he was bad or incompetent are now in the ridiculous never Trump position of supporting this disastrous administration that on every single criterion, whether it's the border, inflation, gas, you name it, crime, it's failed. And more importantly, it is sinful in the sense of what the left sees as sins. And by that, I mean, they wanted a ministry of truth. They have weaponized the FBI. They've unleashed the DOJ, et cetera, et cetera. These guys are not liberals. And so it's very embarrassing to support them. And the result is Donald Trump looks better and better, right? And everybody, you know, says, you know, privately, God, get DeSantis. You get the MAGA agenda, but you don't get the excesses of Donald Trump, the tweeter. But if you look at polls, most of the polls show that Donald Trump is sizably ahead of DeSantis in the primary polls. What I'm getting at is, you would think that the contrast between his record and Biden would really make him look good. You would think that the polls showing him ahead of DeSantis would be reassuring. You would look at the polls that show him dead even or ahead of Joe Biden slightly are reassuring. Okay? But why then would he have a dinner with Nick Fuente or even Kanye West, given what he, yay or whatever his name is, given this state of his mental confusion? Or why would he make fun of Glenn Youngkin's name? Or why would he gratuitously attack Mitch McConnell's wife in quasi-racist terms? Or why do all that? And it doesn't make any sense. And so
Donald Trump's imploding. I've heard you say that. You think he's imploding. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know where his staff is. I don't know who is the person who says, Mr. Trump, Mr. President, we can't have this guy come in and have dinner because the leopard will eat you alive. And you're not an anti-Semite. You've done more for Israel than any president in history. And your grandkids are Jewish and your daughter is a converted Jewish person. So is your son-in-law. He's Jewish. So why would you want to be tagged with an anti-Semitism charge when you're not? But you will be. Or why do you know, that you said the Wuhan virus, and that was a legitimate adjective, but why go in to prove your critics were right by suggesting that you're anti-Asian with the way you make fun of Youngkin's name or Mitch McConnell's wife? Or you created, in some sense, DeSantis, your endorsement beat him over that ridiculous Gillum or whatever his name was, candidate in Florida. Why would you suddenly, right before the midterms, attack someone who was going to have a great night? And he did. It doesn't make any sense. And so, you know, in a lesser fashion, why would Elon Musk get into these little Twitter spats with nobodies? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's so much above all that. You don't know. So what I'm getting at is that people like that with enormous talent and a record of success, it's not their enemies. It's this classical tragic idea of hubris and nemesis and ate that follows. And they've got to be very careful. And so I think Elon Musk understands that, but I'm not sure Donald Trump has people around him that will tell him the truth. And in other words, they're all obsequious or they're afraid of his temper and I think he wants them to tell him this truth. I think he wants someone to say, damn it, I'm not going to let you destroy this candidacy or yourself. But they're not there.
Right. Well, Victor, we're at the end here. Thank you so much for all of this discussion. Boy, you really laid it bare, wokeism and the hypocrisy of our woke capitalists, as I think they're called. Thank you very much. And I'm sure your listeners thank you, too.
Thank you for doing it again, Sammy. And thank everybody for listening. It's much appreciated, especially in these troubled times, so to speak. See you next time.
All right. This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.